Welcome to Trending in Education. Mike Palmer here, joined today by Edward Hannibal, who's the managing director at Alvarez and Marcel. We're going to get into some of the stuff that he has going on and also maybe some hot takes and cool tips on managing the crazy future that we're all living towards. Edward, welcome to Trending in Education.
Thank you, Michael. Good to see you again and looking forward to the conversation. Going back at least 12, 16 months, it's been a wild year for education.
Absolutely. And education and media and technology, where you've worn a bunch of different hats, which is part of why I was excited to get you on, is that, you know, you can kind of see more connections when you've been able to transfer learnings across different domains. Can you catch our listeners up a little on who you are and how you got to this point in your professional life?
Yeah. So like you said, Edward Hannibal, I co-lead the media and entertainment industry at a firm called Alvarez and Marcel. You can consider them just like a full services, professional services company. And we engage across every major media sector. My career started years ago at McGraw Hill and Standard & Poor's, where I did things like automated publishing processes and increasing throughput. From there, I actually ended up going to Pearson and getting really deep into education and education content and the process of creating custom collections of content from, you know, derivative works or published materials. Pearson has thousands of titles, and the concept was, hey, we should be able to let professors come in and choose just the sections of content from a book that they're interested in.
Yeah.
Then let's reroute it, restitch it together, not just cut and paste, but actually restitch the entire content together, updated footnotes and references, created, you know, instructor editions and student editions with questions and all that sort of stuff. We had 10 patents from the work on creating these collections of content. Yeah, that was years ago, and it still probably holds up as one of the most innovative things, where at the end you got a book that came out the other side with an ISBN that students could go to, you know, bookstore and order. And the reason I'm going into detail on that is that's when I really started getting into the collision of technology and education.
Yep.
I'd gone from there, and, you know, I was the CIO at New York Times. I was a CIO for News Corp in Hong Kong and broadcast. So I had my newspaper background, my broadcast background. In between, I did multiple tours of duty with IBM, their global media and entertainment practice. And then coming out of Hong Kong, I got pulled in by the Washington Post to run education for Kaplan Worldwide. So that would be returning back into education, but in a more modern way. And Kaplan was sort of a hybrid, you know, in terms of, you know, formal, you know, traditional education, and real cutting edge innovation.
All the stuff that I was doing, basically.
Exactly. The stuff you were doing in test prep and innovating the experience and innovating how you even prepare and perform for tests and
content. Right.
So it was a great return back into education and everything that's going on. And even, I think you remember, maybe even 10 years ago, introducing Watson into after it should be, you know, Ken Jennings, you know, in Jeopardy.
Right. Sure.
AI has been on our mind for a while. I think, with, like I said at the beginning, within the last 16 months, it's really starting to take hold in terms of getting people to really, truly understand what's possible. Yeah. But that's been the journey. The journey's gone through major media segments, including education and publishing and broadcast and whatnot. And it all comes together where I am now within Alvarez and Marcel, where, you know, you can put together all sorts of learnings from across different sectors.
Right.
Help our clients. But I've been obsessed for a long time with technology and education and how to improve the experience, student outcomes, and engagement.
Yeah. And that's part of what triggered me reaching out to get you back on the show, is that there's a Forbes article, which we'll share as part of the show notes, where you're starting to get out there a little in terms of sharing what you're thinking, sharing what you're noticing, because the background is really interesting. And like I said at the top, like the fact that you can adopt different perspectives, that's frequently what we try to do on this podcast, is like to be looking ahead, what's happening in media and entertainment, what's happening in technology. You know, the Consumer Electronics Show just happened. What does that mean for education? And you're always someone, whenever I had the good fortune of connecting with you, you always had fresh perspectives. You were able to stay on top of what's going on in the world around us. Anything top of mind? You know, you just mentioned AI, obviously, since OpenAI, you know, released ChatGPT 3.5 back in November of, what was that, 22, just 20, November of 22. And then between then and now, you know, multiple cycles, Google just released its latest Gemini, you know, Bard has been rebranded as Gemini. OpenAI has had ChatGPT-4 out there for a while. Folks are starting to realize there is an enterprise level of engagement. And then there's, you know, the free level of kind of dabbling around with, you know, kind of the magic eight ball that is, you know, generative AI. But you've been operating more, you know, client facing, developing a consulting practice, growing a consulting practice that is really trying to stay ahead of what's going on. What kind of things are you picking up on in that space?
Well, I think it's interesting. We're seeing all sorts of dynamics play out within media and entertainment post-pandemic. As you know, viewing patterns have changed, consumption has changed, and the consumer has completely, you know, sort of been turned upside down a bit, as most of our clients have been drawn into going direct to consumer. And what does that mean to go direct to consumer? And all of a sudden, I kind of think the realization is, are we a technology company? I think we're a technology company, but we're not really organized like one. So there's all sorts of opportunities to help our clients figure out the reorientation so that they can start to compete better with really, you know, born natural technology companies like Amazon and Google and Microsoft. And you kind of go, wow, we thought we were competing against other media companies, but now it's changed. So there's a lot of that sort of existential moment where it's kind of like, how do we operate? You know, what kind of skills do we need? How do we in fact become more consumer centric and measuring, you know, consumer demand and preferences? And a lot of that overlaps with the fundamental capabilities that educators need to have now, especially as they go digital. As you know, the experience, the campus, if you will, is now being redefined by the experience in digital form, whether on mobile or online. So as much as education has become more of a consumption sort of experience from a consumer point of view, a lot of what's been rooted in well-crafted media and entertainment content that engages consumers is starting to play out in education as well, It's a matter of keeping attention, you know, keeping engagement without going too far, where you sort of cognitive dissonance and all of a sudden the experience has now overwhelmed your ability to learn. So I think there's a bit of learning to do there, but I think there's been a lot more experience in really appreciating that the consumer, the student, now expects things in a bit of a different way than perhaps traditional, and new opportunities are playing out. I think back when we shared some time together at Kaplan, it was a novel idea in terms of a flipped classroom. It was like, you know, with instructors and teachers, you know, giving the same seminars every year on the same topics, you know, why not maybe record those, or why not choose from the best instructors on the planet and let people watch their seminars and their lectures, go home and watch, and then come in and engage. That's the whole concept of a flipped classroom, which is, you know, you can watch my lecture whenever you want.
The Khan effect to some extent, Like everybody started to think, you know, I could record just like Sal Khan. I could send it to my kids, my students, as opposed to his niece and nephews he was tutoring. It's like the Tiger Woods intersects with Sal Khan. I am Sal Khan. I can actually...
You can actually just learn from Sal Khan or anyone for that matter. I think that did show that there's certainly opportunity there. There's opportunity from students who perhaps came home and didn't quite understand the concepts and they could rewatch them. And then come in to class and maybe engage in a different way with an instructor. And I think you're starting to see it. So that's sort of like, you know, kind of old school. I think we're in the trough of disillusionment now.
Nice. By the way, you are in a safe place to cite the Gartner hype cycle as frequently as you like.
Thank you very much. And I think we know where we are in terms of AI, and we're continuing to go up in terms of expectations and how much people are enamored by it. But I think you're starting to return now to levels of expectations similar to just streaming and recorded media and how that impacted education. Certainly the pandemic, you know, all the time that many educators spent on trying to figure out how to create a distance learning, you know, approach to education that would be rooted in educational discipline. We just sort of threw it in and just said, actually, you know what? We're not going to do that. We're not going to do structured courseware for distance learning. we're just tomorrow going to have the whole school just join online.
Right.
Like, what's happening now tomorrow in New York City?
Today. Yes.
Today. It's kind of like, yeah, you know what? No more snow days. Everyone just go home and get on your Zoom calls or your...
And I just want to say, Edward, it's working flawlessly. It's terrible.
Chaos, right?
It's absolutely
It's kind
chaos.
Of like what happened at the beginning of COVID. It was like, wait, I thought we were, in the business of creating educational experiences that were rooted in strong cognitive science and education sort of discipline around how to create a distance learning. And then we just said, all right, guys, everyone turn on, your Google Hangouts.
I will say credit to Mr. Mack, my son's music teacher. What he was doing in Zoom was quite good. It just took us 45 minutes to get in there because we had to get into Google Classroom, and then the messaging of the Zoom links was wrong. And the problem is that the humans, that stuff is not seamless. That's not like what a kid nowadays would get on TikTok as they start using that kind of technology. What we as adults are used to using Netflix or some of these other platforms that are out there. And they're all kind of really in the space that you're operating in nowadays, where, you're talking about that transition from, we're just producing the media, and then there's sort of broadcast channels, other ways to distribute it. Now what you're saying is those entities are all having to have something that someone can consume seamlessly on their phones. And in some ways, that's ahead of the curve. Why I always like looking at media and entertainment as an education podcast is that frequently the innovation cycles and the competitive landscape and level of investment in this stuff is actually ahead of where it is in education. Lessons maybe for educators out there based on the landscape that you're seeing nowadays, ways in which folks who are either ed tech startups or teachers, instructional content developers, any ideas as far as the education sector and how it intersects with media?
Oh God, there's so many plates in the air right now. And I think the fundamental is the lessons across media and education are the same, is really a keen focus on the consumer of the content, whether it's the lesson, whether it's the video, or the animation or the testware. And the consumer is an entirely different generation often. They grew up digitally native, right? Yeah. So all of that fumbling around trying to get your, Mac online and everything else, that's typically on the institution side. And the instructors are the ones who have the hardest time of installing the plugins and the modules to be able to run the experience. And the kids are at home going, I got this, I'm running it on my iPad or my Chromebook or something. And they're leading that base level experience, right? Because the consumer is different. The consumer is now digitally native in ways that we've never seen before. And I think it's the same thing as you look at ed tech and where funding's going. It's really focusing on the consumer, but wanting to sort of ensure that there's a balance between the consumer and disciplines in education that are still leading to the right student outcomes, which is what most institutions do care about and get measured on. So I think there's lots of, interest in trying to ensure that you don't go too far into just entertaining rather than educating. So there's measurement that's going on there. There's ways of looking at, like right now, with the amount of technology and advancement that's available with artificial intelligence, certainly it's easy to be able to create a lesson plan, leveraging a large language model that has plenty of lesson plans that I can say overnight, oh my gosh, I got to prepare tomorrow for, grid. Give me a lesson plan, that I could use for, eighth graders, that are third week into a course, and boom, you've got a lesson plan. That's pretty exciting. And what you have here is the dynamic of now, for the first time in a while, where you've got the instructors engaging with technology in the same way that students are engaging with technology. So there's a universal in terms of, oh, we're experiencing the same thing together, like a Zoom call. It's not foreign anymore.
This is also an advantage, I think, of the pandemic. It's a silver lining coming out of it, where like our digital floors have all been raised.
Perfect analogy. Exactly. That bar has been raised. It used to be, Google was the biggest threat of, oh my God, what if people can just Google things and answers. Now it's like, well, wait a minute, ChatGPT can do the same thing. So it's just raising the bar, which is like, okay, so what's above that bar is what really matters. And I think that's where the focus is across tech investing and ed tech, which is not just trying to get to the bar, but what are the differentiators above the bar? Sort of what does the experience need to be? Is it rooted in outcomes? Because I think there's a lot of concern within media. It's about measuring consumption, and that's great.
Yeah.
key dynamic being that media content creators are motivated to want you to experience a recording
right
over and over and over again. And then when that happens, you get like a platinum record, right? If that happens in education, it's a failure. The key difference is you want consumption, but consumption to the point where your recall is absolutely precise and you never need to consume it again. You're like, light bulbs go on. You know, you consumed it. That was a great experience. I never need to recall it or to watch it again.
Yeah.
Media, you want to create a little bit of a different kind of a hook.
Yeah.
That addictive nature, which is, you know, in play right now around things like social media and TikTok.
Yeah.
Want education delivered in that way. You want to learn from the experience. You want to make sure it's engaging, but you got to make sure that the actual content and what's being taught and the educational value is rooted in sound discipline and the educational outcomes are being achieved. Otherwise, you're just entertaining and keeping people occupied. It goes into different parts of the brain. It's just being passive, like watching television. If you remembered every episode of Friends, right. Your head would probably explode, right? So there's a bit of that. So I think to your question around some of the trends, certainly AI and its impact on being able to create things that you may have wanted to script out, but now you can do them quicker by leveraging artificial intelligence. Same thing in terms of now the common denominator in both instructors and students leveraging AI in a most accessible way for the first time in history.
Yeah.
Where ChatGPT did, it was unifying and universal in its ability to now allow people, just like Salesforce did back with cloud computing and making cloud real.
Yeah.
Thought it was just some kind of, obtuse or some kind of a weird computing platform, but then they saw, oh, I can use this thing, and all of a sudden light bulbs went on around cloud computing, because you know operators using technology, where all of a sudden the CIOs were like, wait a minute, can you do that? And you're like, yes, you want to promote that. That is liberating, that's advancement. Same thing in education. You're not going to stop the train. It's a matter of figuring out how can you leverage what the abilities are.
Yeah.
And start producing things that still add the value that you need. And I think that's where the investments are going.
That's interesting. Yeah. Immediately it makes me think of gaming and Duolingo, as two models that are out there where there is a bit of that addictive element to them, certainly on the gaming front. And, my wife is more the Duolingo user, so I see how addictive that can be. And I say that with love.
Learn language though, or is she?
Yes. Because that was sort of my point, which brings me to the whole idea of stealth learning, which allows me to also talk about edutainment and infotainment, because I like portmanteaus. But stealth learning to me is the idea that it almost sneaks up on you. Like you're doing something, you're in a flow state, you're having a good experience. And then behind the scenes, the system is understanding how to feed you the right type of content that helps you continue to get better and get better in the right ways. It almost seems like there's a level of sophistication to that instrumentation, so that you're fed, it's also the idea of desirable difficulty, where you need to be challenged enough, but not so much that you get frustrated and you walk away. Any thoughts on that whole idea of, kind of blending, maybe making it just seem like it's a pleasurable experience, and then it turns out that, wow, that was a fun thing that I was doing, and it turns out that I learned all these things.
Wow. Yeah. You could go full gamut to complete immersive learning with, headsets, where I've seen, I think it's Dreamscape doing work. They were doing work with Arizona State, working on complete, educational modules of, biotech, where you're sitting as an avatar in a lab with other students, look around and you're dissecting things
that
you can't actually replicate on campus at scale.
Labster was a company I was looking at that was kind of doing that, like the idea of designing the simulation of the labs that are too hard to reach and aren't really broadly accessible. It's kind of an interesting
100%. Computing power still needs to be there. The labs either, but I think in that case, it was an example of a learning experience within the domains that they focused on that was something like a 400% increase in retention.
Wow.
Right. And I mean, those are levels that you couldn't ignore. It was kind of, and I mean, I might be wrong on the stats. It was a few years ago, but it was an incredible increase of retention by putting people into an environment like that. Right. Which is not just, read about it and hear the lectures and go home and do the workbooks. It's like, you're actually in the lab doing things that you didn't do before. And that was a game. right? It was, you know, creators of Men in Black and amazing production value and very, very expensive to produce, but incredible learning gains, right? So there's part that in terms of the imagery and the recall factor from a student's point of view, burned it in.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of, intrigue and interest, at least something that I've been working on in terms of using, I know that, you know, from your time at Kaplan, a learning management system of which Kaplan has hundreds, right? That well-tuned crafted learning management systems in any certain core curriculum or, you know, learning programs has very well structured sort of guidance from where you start and where you should go next, right? That is by nature what a learning management system does and then checks in terms of whether you're progressing. To me, that's the script. It gives you sort of the sequence, which in most cases is educationally sound in terms of how to teach concepts to a student, that that's the playlist. So what you're talking about in terms of, unlike TikTok, which is measuring sort of interest areas and how quickly you swipe off of something. And the things you stay the most on is like an implicit measurement that I'm interested in this.
Yep.
It'll just play more of that. That playlist is sort of like on a replay, right?
Yeah.
You're just replaying that track over and over again, then introducing other tracks that are like that track. Your point is a very profound one, which is that that's fabulous. If you've got that, you've listened to it, you've mastered it, it's not just more like this. What's the next one in a sequence that could get you to an expressed intent?
Right? Yeah.
So you know what the objective is. Like, where am I going with these tracks?
Right.
That's a fascinating concept that, you know, Dror Saxberg and I used to talk about a lot in terms of whether you can do that in an implicit way, similar to the way TikTok does by looking at clickstream data. But I think now in leveraging of artificial intelligence and the capabilities you have from the large language models, which is that, you know, can you conceptually use a script, like a script engine, if you will, of a learning management system as a way to teach the way to generate a playlist?
Yeah.
You know, dynamically adapt to all sorts of other conditions, like how much time do I have to learn? Do I want to see Joe's videos?
Right.
Say, I thought this was going to be a 6-week class and I didn't do the first 2 weeks. Can you give me a 3-week version?
Right.
That AI is starting to show some promise in its ability to understand how to adapt and perhaps create still educationally sound processes where you can go from point A to point B, but leveraging what's already buried inside of a learning management system. You do that at scale, and I think something exciting can happen.
Yeah, that's very cool. It also does remind me of, you know, Kaplan was fortunate in that we had all these major high stakes interactive sessions with our students where they would just be feeding mostly tests. They would just be feeding us all this information. And then once you have that information that can tie to their learning record, you could really do some personalization. And a lot of the promise of AI, I think, is in that space. What I think is different, and that's where media always brings me to things like interactive or gaming, is that it almost breaks up those touch points into like micro engagements where the learner, the gamer, the consumer is giving me like a very small signal, but we're asking for a lot of that give and take, a lot of that back and forth. And that's one thing that I like about the LLMs and the generative AI wave that we're in, is that it is very much, I was just talking to Bror recently about parenting, and he was talking about serve and return, which is that as parents, you see what your student, what your child is serving up, and you respond, and that sort of reinforces them. I think the dialogic element of the LLMs, the fact that I give you something, you give me something back, is requiring us to kind of be on top of our game and be giving a lot of feedback to the system. Thoughts on that and how that connects maybe to some of what you're running into in the media space?
Brilliant. Totally love the serve and return concept, especially as I deal with some tennis elbow, as that serve and return isn't so great. But yeah, no, so I think it's playing out in a number of different ways. One that I think is the most relevant happens to do with work that we're engaged on with Kaplan. Kaplan's been very public about the use of artificial intelligence that they're exploring and using, in particular for advising, right? So they want to be able to create experiences that used to be experiences where people would come into a Kaplan, you know, land-based center and be able to talk to someone about their career futures and what studying where they should go.
Right.
And it's clear that to your question, that those types of serve and return kinds of dialogues are things that guidance counselors have been providing forever, that language models that are tuned in a specific way, where Kaplan is providing its own intelligence into learning management, to learning models that are exclusive to Kaplan, to replicate that kind of guidance. Mm-hmm. So they can have sort of a Kaplan advisor, a CAP advisor, so it can actually have a conversation with you.
Yep.
Like I was talking about earlier, with an intent, knowing that this is ultimately where it's going to try and bring you, so it can be a natural conversation.
Yeah.
But reverse it a bit in terms of, rather than us engaging with AI, where we're initiating what it is that we want to know, the AI is actually engaging with you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's like kind of like the Blade Runner has flipped, right? The Blade Runner machine, and, you know, on the proxy. So it has an intent in it, and it can engage with you, and it's a more natural, highly scalable type of a platform that learns around what it is that students are engaging on, provides with advisory services, but it is constantly learning, right?
Yeah.
It is to date in the most, you know, recent statistics that are available to the model to be able to continuously get better, which is like an advancement in technology. Some people get afraid about, is this going to, you know, kill sort of human interaction between people? But in this case, you want current stats, you want current data. You want to know that your advisor has kept up with everything that an advisor should be keeping up with.
Right.
And when you start moving towards, you know, some of the AI-based delivery models, you can have confidence that it's considered just about everything and it's looked for the right patterns and it's providing you advisory services that are in fact up to date and accurate. And I think, to your question, I think it's, you're starting to see more and more of those things. And
right.
It's always been, like we talked about earlier, sort of ahead in terms of leveraging tools, technologies, and innovating the experience. I mean, it goes back to the DNA. And I think they are, again, in what they're building here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm envisioning that, and I think we're starting to see it already, that enterprises will work off of smaller, more controlled, more manageable data sets, and then wind up with explainable AI, trustworthy AI. There's a lot of adjectives that are going in front of the AI, but to contrast the large language models, size is not always better, especially if the scale of the large language model is such that you don't really know why it's giving you the outputs that you're giving. Where I think, especially being enterprise facing and developing AI as a strategy and thinking about those services, custom chatbots, which also would lead towards us training up our own fleets of support staff and support crew. I mean, you could extend it ad absurdum, but I think there is an element to which, you know, we're still in the early phases, even though we are 16 months in, where like being able to really tailor it and remove some of the hallucinations or misinformations or accidents that are in there, or potentially have more of them if we think it fosters creativity. But the idea that we can start tuning and training these algorithms and customizing this experience, it's got to be pretty exciting from where you're sitting.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the irony being that, you know, artificial intelligence was created by human intelligence.
Right.
Right. So the fact that there are hallucinations and there's inaccuracies is uniquely human. Right.
Right.
So it's pretty telling that it's so close to mimicking and
right.
past, you know, the ELISA test and the Turing test. Yeah. Right up to the point where you can have it write a term paper for you and it would still likely get a C.
I even interviewed the inventor of the Huggy Bot, which was a robot that was designed through like the Planck Institute. So like a real like research program to design a robot that could hug in a way that, because like basically some of the clues are keep your hands up where I can see them and don't hug too hard and make sure you let go, you know, because it's also like when you're getting hugged, if somebody doesn't let go, you're like, whoa. Settle down on the hug robot.
Now we've gotten to the real
the heart
frontier as to whether or not you can replicate emotion, right?
Right.
Thinking maybe.
Especially when you think about, you know, there is a mental health crisis, loneliness epidemic out there. And to some extent, I think well-designed supports will actually make people feel less alone. Like once these things start getting designed better, but I think it connects back to the other turn of phrase that everyone's talking about, which is humans in the loop. How are you thinking about that? How do you think about keeping the human in the loop and that idea, which I obviously am gravitating towards just in the conversations that I'm having. But I would say from a critical thinking, design thinking perspective, it almost feels like almost getting back to Asimov's laws of robotics. You kind of want to build in some foundation, some first principles to how you design your systems when you're thinking about AI. How do you think about that stuff?
I mean, my immediate thought as my hourglass is spinning on me hugging a machine and somehow feeling more connected to human emotion, that's going to take a little time. But by nature of what we were talking about earlier, as how the effectiveness of many of these advancements is being measured, we stay rooted in outcomes, right? Then that by definition is the human experience, right?
Yeah.
Humans that are going through all of this advancement start to see degradation in their performance and their outcomes, and it's being measured, which is the key. And then, then you've removed the human experience from the objective of education, right? Where you've now hurt people rather than helped. If that matters, which I hope that it honestly, continues to, and it's not just about throwing money and cool technology at things, but if the outcomes are increasing, that is a distinctly human experience. It's a distinctly human experience that if I could learn faster than I could in traditional ways, because I'm leveraging technology in ways that I haven't been able to use before, then I'm advancing my life, my opportunities, my ability to, either learn a new skill and get a new job or, get a new degree in something that I hadn't had the time to do before.
Right.
That is distinctly human. I know you're probably speaking more about the augmentation and the augmented reality concept and that it's not just replacement. I don't think that's ever going to be an experience where it would completely replace. In the areas where it can completely replace human intervention, it probably should.
Right.
And I was talking about this a couple of weeks ago in respect to ATMs, right? And there used to be, you had to go speak to a human being to take money out of the bank. And now it's like, you know what? ATMs work pretty well. And even though I don't get to see a human at that point, I like being able to have access to my accounts from multiple different locations. And if I run into a problem, I could go see a human being. And I think the same play out in education, with the same kinds of dimensions, which is that things that can be replaced with technology certainly should, as long as you're measuring the outcomes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've heard things like grading and interacting with the LMSs and some of the quote unquote grunt work that's built into a lot of teachers' careers can be pushed to automation, pushed to AI, and that should free up more time for coaching, mentoring, getting to know your students,
Absolutely.
Connecting in a more human way. Talking to Edward Hannipol, who's the managing director at Alvarez and Marcel. It's been an amazing conversation. Love to have you back to do this more. There's so much going on. It's tough to keep up with. I'd like to hear from you how you keep up with things, because you are someone who I've always been impressed with. I tend to find out new things when I engage with you. What's your information media diet? Are there any secret hacks or tips for our listeners to kind of stay on top of what's coming?
Look, Michael, I wish I could say I had a great answer to that. I think I do listen to a lot of podcasts like this one and others that sort of have other people just speaking about what they're seeing and giving you some insights into sort of trends and directions. In this case, it's totally evolutionary and new, where it's really leaning on your ability to use critical thinking and your imagination a bit to start to delve into the art of what's possible and leveraging sort of the capabilities that have been established, but you're fast forwarding in terms of where this goes and what the possible outcomes could be. But that comes in terms of balancing against the reality of what's real, right? The firm does a great job of doing that. We have amazing clients that we work with that are, they're bringing to us challenges that they need to solve. And in the process of solving those challenges, you start thinking about ways of what's available. And I think that does push us all forward in terms of trying to make sure that we're doing what's right and staying connected to, the real types of capabilities that are out there. And certainly, breaking some eggs along the way, right? I mean, this is not exact science. There's plenty of parts that are, but in the innovation side of, everything's just working swimmingly well, you're probably not trying hard enough, right? So you got to get a bit of an uncomfortable space. But there's, yeah, there's podcasts, there's, you know, periodicals. I think you and I both know you're finding information from everywhere.
Yeah.
But I often talk about with people who ask how I keep up with even some of the social media trends. My response has always been, you got to be where your kids are, right? If you're the only one texting them and they're on Snap or they're on TikTok and, you know, they're using, you know, tools that you're not using, you should sort of perk your eyes up and kind of look and like, oh, gee, what is that? I want to be where they are.
Yep.
Right? Constantly force yourself to be in the world that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Your ability to then understand the direction is heightened, right? Because you're speaking from experience versus mm-hmm. theoretical and PowerPoint. So I think live the world that you think that, you know, we're heading towards, and you'll find yourself being that pretty caught up in terms of what's real.
Yeah, I love that. Tied to that, I think, is also learning how to empathize and understand folks on the other side, that their profile might be a little different than you, and being able to kind of adapt. And I've heard it discussed as a theory of mind too. It's why people should read fiction, is that you start to get into what it would be like to think like someone else, which actually winds up broadening some of your thinking. I also think there's going to be a reaction against AI in terms of what we think of as human flourishing. Maybe that's a follow-up episode, but that's going to open up some new and interesting dimensions for media companies and for folks who are sort of designing with media relevance in mind. Anyway, we had an amazing conversation, Edward. I always like to conclude with some key takeaways, some thoughts for our listeners as they head back to the rest of their lives. Any concluding thoughts?
No, I kind of feel like the last one is the first one, which is don't be afraid. If you're concerned, go out and try the things that you're concerned about. You'll understand better once you kind of force your way through it. This, like I used the example earlier, is like early days of cloud computing. Most people didn't know what cloud computing was and what the impact would be until they actually jumped in and went, oh, this is different, right?
Yeah.
We're at that point now where consumer-based technology and platforms are opening the door and sort of pulling back the veil in terms of things that seem foreign that aren't so foreign anymore.
Yeah.
So really challenge yourself to start to embrace those types of things. And so you'll gain that, you know, that learning that you need. And also just make sure that you stay rooted in the outcomes versus just the, let's do this because it's cool, which doesn't mean that you don't go forward. Like I said, you know, if you're not failing, you're not trying hard enough. So similar to the first point, you got to be trying things, you got to put them out there, and you got to be, you know, trying to innovate and measuring whether or not it's working and just doing more of the same. Just keep, you know, repeating the things that work and learning from them and advancing your cause.
Amazing stuff with Edward Hannibal, the managing director at Alvarez & Marsal. Edward, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode.
Thank you, Michael. Enjoyed it.
And for our listeners, hopefully you enjoyed what you heard. If you did, please subscribe, tell your friends, do all the good things. We'll be back again soon. This is Trending in Education.